Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
You are back in the House of Mystery, and we are at the interview part of the show. The room is crowded today, but everyone is socially distanced, so don't worry. We're protecting ourselves and each other. Let's see. Let's go through the crowd. We've got, of course, little Dave Martine.
Hello, everyone.
Being us the co-host. We've got also a returning guest. He just likes being here. I think he hangs out here at night, actually. We'll call him Rick, Mr. Sooty Rick. Karatosh, how are you doing, Rick?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Good. Excellent. Good. I'm glad you're wearing clothes today. and now you brought us guests before, and you're bringing us another one here. And he's an author of a new book called Changing the Stars. It's a memoir, and that's Cody Reniger. Thank you for being here, Cody.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Well, you say that now. wait till the end of the show. Before we get that, so let's just start it with Rick here. Rick, what was it about Cody that made you, first of all, bring him to our show and also to help him out with his new book?
Yes. Well, I saw Cody in a movie several years ago called Hollywood to Dollywood. That Gary and Larry Lane did, and his part in the documentary was very moving. It was about him and his relationship with his young son. I think it was 4 or 5, and he was raising his kid as a gay father, and how accepting his son Levi was, and everything. And I was so moved by that, I actually called him to interview him for my book Rainbow Relatives, which was on speaking to kids about LGBTQ families and friends. So, and he did that. So he was in there, and then we became friends. And then he was. Had so many stories of his life that people told him to write a book. So I'd written 2 books, so he thought I was an expert or something. I was happy to help him with the little that I knew and helped him to a little bit direct him in the right path. And he'll tell you a little bit more, you know, about the book and everything. But we had fun working on it a little bit. And I think it's really a lot of people are reacting great to it. So I'm so happy that he's getting that reaction. And his story was really It was fun to be a part of it. It was inspiring for me to help him and to see what it's doing with other people.
Yeah, and it's recent too. There's been so much stress going on around the world, and especially in the States. I see a lot of people I can't help but think of the song "Under Pressure," and this sort of reminds me of how much pressure people are under. and we don't realize it when we see them on the street or we pass them in the shopping mall or on the bus or whatever. We don't always realize what other people are living through. So it's an important story in that way. So Cody, we're all talking about you.
Yes, sir.
So this, before we get into the story, it's quite a story and what you went through. Let's talk about, what was the reason for you to write this book? Like, why did you actually want to put it down on paper in words for, you know, cause you have to realize that you're exposing yourself. You're kind of, like I say, when we pass someone on the street, we don't always know what their life is about. We can't really judge them. We don't know. But you're kind of laying all your cards on the table, so to speak. You're letting people know your vulnerability, your kind of what you've been through. Why do that?
Well, you know, I think I kind of do that, and I have done that for a while in life. I think I've been subconsciously kind of looking back and reaching back, trying to get more people to kind of embrace life, and especially the ones that have had a traumatic youth and abused youth. And I really have a passion for those, since that was a lot of my life. So I think I've been trying to do that for a long time. And every time I would sit and speak with someone, try to help, they'd say, "Wow, you should write a book." And I know everybody says that. I mean, people say that to each other often. And so I just kind of blew it off. And I'm like, well, I'm here and I'm helping now. So anyway, so I ended up doing that movie. And then I did some other stuff that was kind of very much in the public eye. And so I think I finally realized that I had some attention and I had a platform that where it was just time to write this book where I could help a lot of people with one fell swoop instead of one by one, as I had been doing, or hopefully I had been doing. I hope I'd been giving proper advice throughout this all this time. I may have wrecked some lives, but I, yeah.
If they're listening to this show, they probably are. Yeah.
So the reason I wanted to do this was just to try to help and try to pull, you know, get people. They say misery likes company, but I'm kind of the opposite. I'm like, happiness loves company. I want everybody else to be, you know, as alive and embracing life as I am. So maybe that's why I did it. And you're right, putting that all of this out there, the first week, whenever we hit that button to launch my book, I am not one that ever really deals with anxiety, or I deal with it, but I just really don't hang on to it. I don't get anxious. The moment we pushed that button, my heart palpitated. I was just trying to keep myself contained because I felt so unbelievably vulnerable and exposed. And I just thought, wow, I just put all of my darkest moments out into the world for everyone to hear and to judge and to come back with their own opinions. And I just didn't know how it was going to go until just a few days later, I start getting these messages trickling in that were just overwhelmingly powerful in saying how much just me being that vulnerable. And I think it might be a lesson for me later in life and maybe a lesson for others to just, you know, take that chance on being invulnerable. Because since then, 2.5 weeks later, I have gotten many, many messages of people sharing with me their own trauma and telling, and I don't think I've mentioned in this book, is kind of like a handbook. I talk about all the things that happened, but then after each chapter, I kind of tell you what I did and how I changed and where my mindset was I just didn't want it to be all doom and gloom. I wanted it to be some doom, and then I will show you how to get out of it. I help you, you know, I show you the pits I was in, and then I show you how I got out. And then I also mention how you can do that. So it's more of a guidebook to happiness, really, if you were to sum it up. So being vulnerable was scary, but it was worth it. You know, sometimes some of the best things in my life have scared the crap out of me at first. And this was definitely one of them.
Well, I would think that it's also therapeutic, right? The best thing in the world to do is to be able to talk to someone or talk to someone that you know about things you're going through or having challenges with. So in a way you're just talking openly to people what was the hardest thing to put in the book? Like, what was the hardest thing that happened to you that you felt obligated to tell, but it was a struggle?
I really felt like I had to, you know, there was so much, to be honest, that I didn't put in the book, that I just felt like I really didn't need to bring my readers into those kind of places. I just needed to put just enough darkness to show where I, what I went through, so that I could show the light. So I picked two of the more traumatic moments in my life, and one of them was I really struggled with overcoming this memory of one of my adopted fathers used to tie me up and blindfold me basically naked in a barn and whip me for hours, thinking that they thought that I had demons. They thought that they were doing good. In fact, I say that this was because I just didn't embrace their religion and their lifestyle or whatnot. But they, I say that no harm was meant, yet harm was done, because they thought they were doing good in the name of God. And it just was not good. It was not good. So that was definitely a memory that I had to struggle with writing, because when you do write, you're describing the smells of the room. You're describing the feel of the room. You're describing the look in your abuser's eyes. And then all of a sudden you're back in that moment again. And that it caused, so you asked me if this book was therapeutic a moment ago. And I think that I had healed, I had done the legwork, and I had really delved in. And anytime I saw an emotion or something rise up in myself that was obviously residuating pain from my childhood, I would actively heal that. I would do everything I could, even go to a library, even Google, you know, talk to a counselor, whatever I could, just because I did not want that. But I, by writing this book, I feel like it's almost like when you break your leg and it heals, but it didn't heal properly. I feel like writing this book was kind of re-breaking that wound, and having it heal better, smoother, properly. So it was scary, and I didn't expect that, and I thought I was healed all properly at first, but it has been very therapeutic, and also all these other people reaching out to me has been very therapeutic too.
How do you feel about the people that you were involved with when you were a kid? When you look back at things like your mother or your, you know, like the stepfather or the person that was beating you for not understanding or following the religion, when you look back at these characters in your life, what's your feeling towards all of them now?
For some reason, I've never, I'm just not made to be a resentful person. I think the hardest part was not being able to protect my siblings from their abuse. That was something that I struggled more so with. But looking back at my abusers, even whenever it was happening, I remember at a very early age, and I do mention this in the book, that I knew that there was something broken in that person. I never thought they were being vicious or mean. I saw a broken soul, and I just... there's something inside me that said that this person was wounded and that I had to survive them, for one thing. But I just remember looking at such a young age into the eyes of these people and just knowing they were broken. So I've never been resentful. If anything, I just hope that they got the help that they needed so they didn't hurt anyone else, you know. I also mentioned that one of the guys that was really, really abusive at a younger age, I recently found out that he is and has been homeless in Colorado for years. Just living on the street. He's a legit homeless person up there. And my first instinct and my first thought was, well, I need to help him. I've got to figure out how to get him some food or make sure he's safe. And then I just kind of stopped in my tracks. I'm like, wait a second. Shouldn't I be like plotting my revenge, or, you know, he's an easy target now, you know, something like that. But I just didn't. So to me, that really showed me that I have healed, because I am zero resentment. And I just, if anything, I just have this innate passion to make sure that they're not hurting anyone else.
So how do you look at life now? Like, what this whole thing that you've been through, and now you've sort of put it all in a book, you put it all out there, and it's all exposed. How do you carry on with your life now? What's different about your life since you've written the book?
Well, that's been, it's just, I kind of thought I was going to write the book, launch it, send it out into the world, and it would do its thing, you know, but since then I've been kind of nursing it and nurturing it and trying to get it as far as I can. And I think that I am normally a very happy person. I think this has just reignited a fire inside me, an extra happiness, if you will, because now I'm truly getting to do what I've always wanted to do, and that is inspire and heal. And I know that sounds so cheesy, but that's just how I'm built. I'm just really getting really excited about what might come of this. And I've already been asked to speak at two different conferences, and there's a magazine here that's done a 7-page article on me, and they said that the world needs optimism right now, and I seem to have a bit of that, so they did this entire spread on me, and I just feel like I'm in a position now to help more people, and that's all I've ever wanted to do. But then I know that there's a certain responsibility that comes with that. And now I'm kind of questioning myself and thinking, am I strong enough? Am I equipped to say these things? I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a doctor. I'm just somebody. I'm just a witness to my own life and how I overcame it. So I think that I'm just really excited about what might come out of this, and I'm ready for it. I'm here for it.
You know, it's an interesting title you chose, Changing the Stars. It's sort of, to me, that kind of is like saying that there's a certain fate lined up for you, but you can change that. Is that true?
Absolutely. Of course, that's relative to an extent, but I got that title from a movie, A Knight's Tale, I'm sure many have seen. And in that movie, this boy was very poor, and his dad sends him off to work for a knight, and he kind of tells him as he scurries off to change his stars. And so he comes back, that boy comes back like 20 years later, and he's now a knight, and he's conquered the world, and all of London is chanting his name, and he finds his father, his biological father, and he walks in, and he said, I've changed my stars, and he completely changed his destiny. And something just about that, I recognized, my heart, my soul recognized, and I think it's just kind of reverberated inside me ever since. So it was an easy title to choose.
How is it, now you've got a son, so how is it for your son? How is all of this for your relationship with your own son?
I think, well, he told me that when he read the book, he and his life partner here read the book. They have three beautiful kids, and I'm sitting here at their house right now visiting in Arkansas. But he said that it was like reading a movie watching a movie that he'd seen two or three times already, because he kind of grew up with all of these stories about, you know, that I've told him and I've used as life lessons along the way while raising him. So I think I know he's really proud of me. He's told me several times how proud he is of me for doing this and being so vulnerable. And it is a little bit odd because some of the things in my book are very, very personal. And for my son to read it and know, I think it just gives him an even more of a respect for me. And I'm always just trying to be just a guide the best I can through life for him. So I think it feels like I'm able to just lead him a little bit more by just sharing and showing him how vulnerability can be a very good thing.
So what do you think the good thing is that's come out of your life? Was it all bad, or was there some good things that came out of your childhood?
Well, the things that gave me an amazing tool belt to live the best life I can. And as I was saying earlier, I mingle with some of the most educated, most interesting people on this planet. And I would not have had been able to even sit in the room with these people had I not been in a certain foster home that, whether it was good or bad, it still taught me how to behave properly in public, because I was like a little, you know, I was living under a bridge before. We were basically little wild animals. So I think some of these things helped refine me a little bit. It kind of made me become a chameleon where I can blend in any crowd. I'm also, since we were homeless, it gave me an extreme passion just to travel. And I've now been around the world twice, and I travel the globe and, you know, just fully embrace traveling and new cultures and new people. And I think I wouldn't have done that had my mother not been homeless. We would have just, you know, I would have probably put roots down somewhere and But to me, I just, it kind of set me on the go, and I haven't stopped since. That's definitely been a plus.
Oh, God, yeah. And just the fact that you got to meet Rick, there's...
Yeah, Rick's fantastic.
I find out that you could go through anything for that.
That's worth $1 million right there.
Like anybody could write a book if they had a Rick. Because when I met Rick, I literally had just compiled all of my memories into no particular order. I would just sit there next to my fireplace with a glass of wine and just write and write and write and write everything about that memory I could. And so when I came to Rick, I basically came with him with an armful of a mess, and I was like, help me put this into a book. So he ended up streamlining it all, getting it chronologically in order, and then helped me smooth out all the lines and allowed me, he basically built the coloring book and allowed me to fill it full of color.
Oh, I hope he treated you good. That's
all too. Oh, yeah, he was nice sometimes.
Yeah, well, sometimes, nice. Yes. Yeah. You can be very careful with that one. Okay. You know, don't sit in a room alone with him.
He's fantastic, and I will recommend him to anyone if they need somebody to help write a book.
Well, we couldn't sit in a room alone too much because of the COVID thing. So it took a few years for him to, you know, get it finished. But in the last year of it, we had to do the Zoom thing, and, you know.
Yeah. Well,
and the pandemic, I was just sitting at home and he was at home. We had plenty of time. We just sat and we basically wrote a book over FaceTime.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, that's pretty good. How did you choose some of these stories? Which memories would you choose? Like, I'm trying to figure out how you narrowed in, because there's probably a whole lot that you left out. So what was it that would be particular about something, a memory that you would actually include it in the book?
I was trying to be relatable, and yeah, you're right. I'm 44, and I have had a few lives in one. I mean, I feel like I've lived three different people's lives at this point. So it would have been hard to pick, and it was hard to pick. So I tried to just find something that most people could relate to. And over the years, being open with my story anyway, I've noticed that a lot more people have been, you know, abused, whether that's sexually or physically or emotionally or anything, and it's always swept under the rug or tried to be or told it was normalized in some way by the abuser. They're like, oh, this happens. In fact, I told one of the sisters that I was in this one of these foster homes about the beatings, and she was like, oh, well, Dad whipped us all, and just kind of blew it off. And I'm like, that what happened to you? It's not what happened to me. So I think I just needed to find something that was relatable. And so many people have related to some type of abuse or neglect or whatnot. So I tried to pick some of the darkest moments there so that they could have, so they could see that theirs might not be as bad as they think it is. You know, I try to really drive it home that it's all relative, and you are the one that gets to choose that. Each and every one of us gets to choose how relative that these memories are to us. So I tried to find the ones that everybody would relate to. Or that many would.
Do like you've been through so much, do you find that you recognize other people for what they've been through without even really getting to know them, just by maybe
very quickly? And yeah. I think that I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but I think that people will show you who they are. They very subtly, if you pay attention. I know that is again a cliche, but people will show you by their mannerisms, by how they touch you or how they don't touch you or how they look at your eyes or how they react if you move too quickly around them. But I mean, people, you can see who's wounded. And I think we all can if you tap into your own just empathy. Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I think that people can really see, recognize these broken souls if you're wanting to see that 100%. And also I find that those people find you. If people will latch on to you if they can sell that you're a kind person that they feel safe around. They will find you if you're just looking, I think. And, you know, I did another interview, and I actually – the guy kind of reached out to me during the interview about something that he had struggles with. And I didn't pay attention to it until I re-listened to the interview. And I realized that I had just blown right over what he was trying to tell me. So, it's just more of a, just really paying attention and listening with your heart, then these people will find you.
Well, you must see a lot of people that go through denial, especially about sexual abuse.
Yeah, they rationalize it a lot. And especially people that end up, if it's happened by someone that they love, they still tend to, it seems like their love for that person overcomes the fact that that person abused them. They would rather love them. And that's a beautiful thing about mankind, but it's also very self-deprecating, very dangerous. It's kind of like the Stockholm syndrome almost. But I think that... everybody needs to reach out this way.
It's a real, real interesting story. Now, I don't know what happened to your mother. So is your mother still alive?
My mother now, she was killed 6 years ago. No, six, yeah.
Okay. Did you ever mend your relationship with her? Or how do you?
I did.
You didn't?
I did.
You did?
I think the universe kind of made this happen, because just a few months before she died, I hadn't seen her for a while, and she came to stay with me on my farm. And her and I, she also, you know, she was part of a cycle, so she had really dealt with a lot of abuse in her life that she had romanticized somehow, because it happened from her father. So she tried to just love her father past that, and I was really able to use the skills that I had acquired through my life to help her. And for once and finally, she realized that what her dad had done to her was abuse, and that it's okay for her to cry about it and realize that the life that she had was not her choice. And I think that we were able to do a lot of healing. And we just sat there for hours on my back porch on my little farmhouse in Arkansas, and we sat there for many nights and many hours just talking and healing and healing. And I felt like we were in a beautiful place for once. And that was the last time I saw her. So I think the universe gave me a beautiful gift there in helping her heal just before she was killed.
So that's really important, like in a case like this, to, I don't want to say challenge, but maybe face the demons, face the people that abused you in a way.
I think so. I think we can take a lesson from the AA stuff where they say they go back to make amends, except I mean, I think that there's nothing wrong with us reaching out to our abusers to make amends as well, and just give them an opportunity to see themselves through your eyes in the reflection of your own eyes. And maybe that can cause them to get help. I mean, you never know. The main thing is it needs to end, and that person's going to abuse until they get help, and until someone calls them out on it. And if they don't, then they need to be kept away from some people so they can't be hurt. They can't hurt others. I mean,
yeah. So what do you think of the whole system in the States for fostering and things like that? And was there any help for you going through all these challenges?
Well, imagine there's been a lot of changes since our case. And in fact, in 1980, our case was one of the largest in the U.S. And we added three new laws to what constitutes as abuse and some guidelines for foster parenting. So I can't speak as of what it is today, since I'm not involved in the foster care system. But back whenever I was in it, it was very neglectful, extremely neglectful. But I have heard that they've had leaps and bounds. And I believe that their heart, you know, they're out there to do good, but they have been paying a lot more attention to the kids and not just the adults. I noticed that they've been listening, and people will take the kids' word over the adults, whereas when I was in, the kids had no voice. I think that a lot has changed.
I think so too. But so what would you recommend for someone that's going through some sort of challenge like this, that what you went through and that? What did you do to cope? Like, what was your coping method?
I found I'm an artist. I draw and I paint and I'm pretty much anything art. So I would find myself hiding away in my art. I also would definitely reach out for the hands that were reaching out for me. You know, I would look for people that were there to help and not just the ones that look like they were there to help. You know, I would actively pay attention. Having a life of abuse gives you a sixth sense of survival, so that you are able to spot the ones that are safe. So I would suggest to reach out, even if you're an adult surviving your memories and everything. I would just reach out to anybody you can and just start talking, no matter how painful it is. You have to start speaking and talking and actively find your patterns in your life and find out how it's still residuating in you, whether you find yourself crying often or angry often or just staying away and far away from people. Check your patterns and see how healed you are. And there's no reason not to heal. I would strongly suggest just actively finding your flaws or the pain that someone else put there and heal it. Because at a certain point, if you are an adult and you are still dealing with this pain and of what someone did to you as a child, then you are the one that's causing yourself to be a victim. You are victimizing your own self because you have not done the legwork to go out and heal yourself and fix yourself. So you're choosing to be a victim every single day if you're not working on it. The same way you can choose to be happy every single day. No matter how big or small these decisions are, you're choosing them, whether you know it or not. So I would suggest keeping in mind your patterns and also just reaching out for anyone who might want to listen or anyone who you want to talk to, honestly. Just reach out.
Well, I would think, you know, that like, you know, just like the co-host Dave here, just a big drinker. I could imagine that it would be easy to fall into the drinking or drug sort of pattern to kind of, rather than face the demons himself. And did you come across that yourself? Were you tempted to go down that road?
Oh, I was a raging drunk through my early 20s, but I drank a lot. It was more social, and I think it was more of the age, but I was actually raising my son. So I would have to get a babysitter and go out or whatnot, or his mom would keep him or my sister or someone. So I realized that I was just kind of numbing some things back then. I didn't realize it, or I felt like I had to be doing that in order to entertain my friends and keep my friends around or something like that. But I kind of guess it goes back to those patterns. And once you realize it, you know, like Oprah says, once you know better, you do better.
Yeah.
So that's what, yeah.
You know.
So it is. It's definitely a pattern in all, most abused people that they find one way or another to dull the pain, whether it's drugs, sex, food. You know, just I think it just again goes all the way back to your patterns and just paying, being, wanting to be a better you. You know, there's no reason not to be a better you. So stay focused on who you are and what you're doing. And if your relationships are failing over and over, you know, that's probably a trigger. I had to take 2.5 years off from dating at all because I realized I was making a pattern of the same type of people and the same type of thing. So I just shut it down and focused on myself. But that's my only advice. It's just what patterns. And also if you're seeing yourself in a pattern that has to do with alcohol or drugs or something like that, that will end up killing you, you absolutely need to reach out for help.
Yeah.
Very common.
Right. See, Dave, don't go through the drive-through. He's so bad he goes through the drive-through to get cocktails. My God. Oh,
amazing. Oh, it's terrible.
Tie him down. Well, that's, you know, it's kind of interesting, but in the fact that you seem to have gone through all of this, and you come out of it kind of on top. What
I still have a long ways to go.
Oh yeah, well I think life is constantly that way because we deal with change every single day, right? So
yes.
There's nothing perfect about it. It's the experience of going through it. So we just have to keep facing it every day. We just don't want to be going through the drive-through. That's all every day. But we do. You know, we have to face it. What would your advice be to someone right now, today? If they can't seem to find any help, can't seem to find anybody around, and they have sort of these things going on, like one of them, even the sexual abuse or someone beating them or just in any way of at all, what would you suggest for them to do? What hope is there?
If they can't find anyone to help them?
Yeah, kind of, I find that, a lot of times this sort of isolates people. You know, they don't want to talk to people if they are going to school or whatever, whoever is around them. I don't know. Was this true with you? Didn't it sort of isolate you?
I think I know what you're saying. I have, I had siblings at one point and then, that were going through the same thing with me. Yeah. And then once I was in another home where I couldn't, I tried to say, but you end up learning not to speak out because then you get more abuse because the odds of them believing you over your parent is very slim, whether that's your natural parent or not. But I would think if you absolutely can't find anybody, which would be very rare because there are people always around. If you absolutely couldn't find anybody, I would just say find it within yourself. You know, not to quote Mariah Carey, but there's a hero inside you. And I truly think I tapped into my internal hero. So for those that are going through it now, just think everything you need to know is already inside of you. If you can't find someone on the outside, reach right there inside you and find your strengths. Whether it's just one small thing that you think is your strength, beat it. You know, nurture that one strength and the rest will grow. You will grow. And it's only temporary. You know, if you're a child and this is happening to you, then you're going to grow up and you can get out. The moment I turned 18, I left and I said, the rest is up to me. But up until then, I had to hide in my art. I hid in the woods. I just would kind of hide in my imagination. I would find my safe place and hide my imagination, find the beauty in the smallest things I possibly could. So I think that if you listen to your soul, everything's in there and it's going to help you come out. It's going to help you be stronger. And you're going to end up with an amazing tool belt to have a beautiful life if you so choose.
Well, I don't know. The kids nowadays don't want to leave till they're 35.
That's true.
That'll be a tough one. I don't know. That's just me. So how's life now? Have you done Britney Spears hair? You know, you do hair for the celebrities. I'm just wondering, you know.
Oh, I was next door to her the day she shaved her head, though. I heard her screaming on her balcony and all of her friends screaming about her and everything. Screaming, what have you done? What have you done? And it was a big, crazy thing. But no, I have never done her hair, although I would love to. She's a doll. I've done many that I can't speak about because you signed the NDA and whatnot. But I do have Marie Osmond's one of my favorite people on this planet, and she's put quotes in the book and everything. She's a fantastic person, and many more. I think I talked about Farrah, spoke about Farrah Fawcett and Elizabeth Taylor in my book, a few of those, and that some a little bit older Hollywood, but some of the newer ones I can't really say. But anyway, you asked me how life is, and life is absolutely amazing. I am married to a wonderful, healthy, kind man. I'm an artist, a writer now, and a celebrity stylist, so I'm absolutely having the time of my life. I have three amazing grandbabies, one of which is named after me, and I'm sitting here at my son's house, and his girlfriend is here as well, and they are just my whole heart. So life is absolutely amazing. And my husband and I travel the world. Like I said, we've been around the globe twice as of now, and I just can't think of one bad thing that's happening in my life, other than I'm just getting older and things hurt. But other than that, I mean, life is good. And you know, and it just didn't happen. I actively made it this good. This was not luck. This is what anyone can do. And I'm just loving life. I live in Brentwood, California. It's sunny every single day, and I get to spend a week with my grandkids every 6 weeks when I fly to Arkansas. And
you're friends with Rick.
I'm friends with Rick. You know, you invite these beautiful people in your life, and I feel definitely very lucky that Rick is in my life.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Wow. So, as you know, in your life.
Oh. And he gets to be on great radio shows like yours.
Yeah, yeah.
Big girl.
Yeah, big. So what's next? Where do you see yourself going with this? Because then this is kind of taking off for you, Changing the Stars, you know, the book, the whole, you're going to be doing some speaking and stuff like that. It seems to have caught on with some people. Where do you see yourself going? Are you going to do more books like this or more, go further?
Well, I think that I would love to do a children's book. And as an artist, I can illustrate it myself. And that would just, you know, ignite another passion. So I think once the, wherever this book takes me, Changing the Stars takes me, we'll see. I'll do that as much as you can and try to get it to, you know, get that message out as much as I could. And then once that fizzles down a little bit, I'm going to start working on a children's book. And just try to help these kids and try to do the same message more of in a children's language. So that would be nice. But I definitely think that this has changed me, and I feel a new passion for my old passion.
Yeah. Do you have a website? Do you have some sort of place that you like people to go to find out more about you, more about the book, more about your life?
I have a Facebook page, and it's at Cody Reniger. There's a Cody Reniger Changing the Stars. So I have some Facebook pages in place. Rick, do you know which one is? There's one of them is, they're both code. If you just type in my name, Cody Reniger, it's all gonna
one, I think
up.
You just have it as Changing the Stars. And the other one is, yeah, Cody Reniger. I know you have the two on there. But, and then so they can get information from those. And the book is on Amazon, so people can also go on there to find that and more information on that. But, you also have an artist page, don't you?
I'm all over social media, Facebook and Instagram.
It's Instagram. What is your Instagram? Is it at Cody Reniger? Do you know?
There's an at Cody Reniger, I think. I have a lady in Florida that's helping me run my Instagram. So it's at Cody Reniger. If you just type that in, it comes right up. And that'll also take you to my Facebook page.
Great.
Because I think they're linked.
Well, we'll have that all figured out, and we'll hold it up for people so when they're listening, they can find you in one click and stuff like that. So tell us, Marie Osmond, is she really on that diet Nutrisystem? Or?
Oh, yeah, she is. If you spend 5 minutes with her, she'll be force feeding you this stuff too. And it's all very good. It's kind of shocking how good that is. But she's Marie Osmond has like an 8-pack. She's got abs for days, and it's from her diet. It's amazing. But she has abs like you wouldn't believe. And she says it's from singing. But I'm like, I sing in the shower all the time, and I've only got the one ab at this point. So,
well, you got to see really.
Does she really love the country?
Yeah, she does. She likes to think of herself as a little honky tonk. She likes more so. Yeah, she's. She definitely, where she lacks in being country, she makes up with wanting to be country.
Well, there you go. I still want to know about Britney. Has this COVID affected your mood or your ability to write at all? Did it have any effect?
I think it fueled me a little bit more because I noticed that so many people are getting, I think they've all just reached their point and a lot of people are struggling. A lot of people who already were struggling with depression and whatnot, or, you know, it's just made it worse for them. And so I felt like I needed to really hurry up and, because I've been writing this book for 6 years and during the pandemic, the more I felt this pressure and everybody else just feeling so overwhelmed, I just wanted to really get as much optimism out into the world as I possibly could. And I think I have.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And when you look back, if you look back at your book now, is there anything you would change?
Well, no, I don't think so. I don't think I'm in that place yet since I did just launch it 2 weeks ago. I think that some of the feedback is people want more. They keep telling me, they say that it's been very powerful and that when they close it, there's someone wanting to know more about my sister Sue, which I could have added some more detail. I think I could have just maybe said more positive. I don't know. Maybe I left room for a second book. Who knows? But
there you go.
Yeah, I'm not in a place where I have regrets yet. And if I do find myself with regrets, I'll just write another book.
There you go. Well, how is it with your siblings now? You guys doing okay?
Oh, well, you're gonna have to read the book.
Oh.
No, my sister. I have a sister that I'm very close to. She's the one that's just older than me, and I dedicated my book to my sister because her and I are very close. We survived this place together, and I probably wouldn't have survived had it not been for her, because at times she was the only one that was there that could feed me, even though she's 3 years older than me. She was feeding me, changing my diapers, you know, we lived under a bridge. So her and I are very close. I have an older sister that we're also close. She ended up kind of joining, what, for lack of a better word, a cult, and lives in the woods in Missouri and is very involved in this thing. So her and I don't really, we text from time to time, but we truly speak different languages because she still identifies as a victim, and she likes that. She wants to be there. She wants to wallow. So I guess in a way I wrote this book for her as well. But then my youngest brother has just been in and out of prison. And then now he's homeless in Denver and he wants to be homeless. He drinks a handle of vodka every day and he just loves, that's who he wants to be. And obviously he's not going to live long at that rate. And then my other brother has been in and out of prison for 20 years as well. So it's just me and my older sister Sue, and we are very close, and she has two amazing kids that are my niece and nephew, and they are grown and have kids of their own, and we're all very close. Very small, close-knit family, as it turns out to be.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. It's pretty quite the story, and I appreciate you doing it, doing the book, and coming on the show.
Man, I really appreciate this, helping me get the word out.
Oh, that's what we do here. Okay, well, our guest has been Cody Reniger, and the book is Changing the Stars. It's a memoir. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thanks, Cody.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.